ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। The last topic we saw in Vedanta Treatise book is the, in the first chapter, the topic was Vedanta procures happiness. We are only left with two more topics in this chapter. Vedanta provides material prosperity and eternal bliss within. So this talk, this chapter is called as Role of Vedanta, where in this portion, introduction to Vedanta, he first talks about role of Vedanta. Then he said, Vedanta will explain everything appealing to your reason and logic. You've got to study, understand, apply that in life and then get the benefit. So therefore he said reason is the sap of Vedanta. You can't leave reason and then blindly follow Vedanta and try to get the benefit that we discuss in this portion. So he says when you start understanding yourself about your true self, you become more and more independent. You know, the chart that we saw, that figure, AB line and CD line, two parallel lines, it talks about human evolution vis-a-vis dependence on the world. When you evolve 75%, you need only 25% of the world. Our dependence on the world is only about 25%. But you will have the capacity to draw 75 or more. But what you need is only 25. That state is called heaven. When you are only developed 25, when you need 75, you cannot get more than 25 or 30. So there will be a lot of deficit, and that state is called hell. So therefore, the idea is to develop the inner personality as we develop the world. Vedanta is not saying don't develop the world, but development of the world should not be at the cost of inner development. So one needs to understand about oneself, the personality layers, and then go deeper and realize the self. As you get closer and closer to the self, your life becomes more peaceful and prosperous. So he talked about how Vedanta helps in procuring happiness by explaining to us about our, you know, different layers, different personalities, and enabling us to identify with these subtler personalities. We start deriving subtler happiness. The happiness we derive from emotional level compared to the physical is far superior. The happiness we develop or experience at the level of intellectual is far superior to the emotional. The happiness we enjoy when we go and realize the self is the highest. So by slowly, slowly explaining to us about the subtler layers and keeping our thoughts on the subtler layers, we become detached from the grosser personality, grosser layers. That detachment brings joy. You know, that detachment not only brings joy, that detachment brings us, gives us that ability to deal objectively at that lower level. So as a result, we will be more productive at that level and we'll be more happy as well. So therefore he says, Vedanta helps you to procure happiness. Procure happiness in the sense, it explains to you that there is no happiness in the world outside. The happiness in the world outside is the creation of your mind. There is no joy in the outside world. It explains beautifully, if the happiness is there in the world outside, it should be experienced by everybody who contacts it. That's not the case. So the book gives the example of a person who loves cigarette and it doesn't bring joy to everyone. It brings joy to somebody, it brings, you know, distress to somebody else. Therefore, how can you say that there is joy in the outside world? So it explains to you all that, and then it helps you to go deeper into your personality. Through that, you procure the true happiness from within. Now, the next topic is Vedanta provides material prosperity. How does it help you to become materially prosperous? See, this question always lingers in everybody's mind. Okay, fine, over a period of time, I may experience a far superior happiness or joy. I may become more contented. All that is fine. But till then, I have my, you know, material needs. Who's going to satisfy that? I need to work in this world. Will this subject Vedanta help me to become more productive, more prosperous? Is it going to help me? That's the question all of us have, isn't it? Why is it that people don't come to Vedanta? Because they think this is only for peace, not for productivity. It is actually wrong. It's due to misunderstanding. In fact, when all the confusions and conditionings and the attachments are removed, one becomes more dynamic. In fact, that's what Vedanta does. It gives you more clarity, direction in life. You become more dynamic. That not many people understand. So he says here, Vedanta provides material prosperity. So he's going to explain in this topic, how does it provide material prosperity? So please read, Vedanta provides material prosperity.
Vedanta provides material prosperity. The world abounds in material wealth, yet you could remain in poverty. To gain prosperity, you need to learn the technique of drawing the wealth from the world. Vedanta has the formula for efficiency and productivity. Three main disciplines constitute that technique.
See, to understand these few lines, you take the example of a city where RBI is there, no? Reserve Bank of India. In Delhi, we have the Reserve Bank of India in the place. Now, I don't know if there are any, huts or anything around that area. So, there is Reserve Bank, but around that you will find so many people living on the platform or in very small house in a very poor condition. They're just next to RBI. That doesn't make them rich. So that's what he's saying. There is enough wealth in this world. The world abounds in material wealth. Yet you could remain in poverty. Why? Because you do not know the technique of right contact. See, there's a technique of contacting the world to draw the wealth out of the world. And what is that technique? So he says to gain prosperity, you need to learn the technique of drawing the wealth from the world. So, what happens is, the poverty in this world is not because there is no wealth there. There is enough wealth. But you do not know the technique. So he says, Vedanta has the formula for efficiency and productivity. And what is that formula? One needs to understand the formula and apply it. To apply that formula, you need to bring about certain change in your personality. You know, you need to have developed a little bit more. So that he's going to talk about. Three main disciplines constitute that technique. What are they? Please continue.
Three main disciplines constitute that technique. Concentration, consistency, cooperation. You need to learn and practice them to gain success and progress in your life.
See, when he says you need to learn, a lot of people say, what is this big deal? He's mentioned three C's. We know this. Concentration. Consistency. Correct. And then cooperation. Of course I know. But what is concentration? What is consistency? What is cooperation and how do you get cooperation? It's easy to say we need cooperation from others. And then you say nobody is cooperating. So how to get that cooperation? Who will get that cooperation? How to make yourself in such a way that you get cooperation from others? What kind of actions if you do, you will be able to get cooperation from others? What you need to have within to be able to get that cooperation? We need to understand that. And what is concentration? Why am I not able to concentrate? Who doesn't know that one of the most important factors in success is concentration? Everybody knows. But then how to concentrate? What should I do to develop this concentration? That he is going to discuss. Continue.
The sin of concentration is to keep your mind focused on the present action. The natural tendency of the mind is to slip into the past or future. It hardly stays in the present. It worries about the past or becomes anxious about the future. Your mind thus dissipates your energy. You need a powerful intellect to control the mind. The knowledge of Vedanta helps you to strengthen the intellect and hold your mind in the present without allowing it to slip into the past or future. Which is concentration? Which renders your actions objective. You then become more efficient and productive in your field of activity.
So, concentration is an intellectual discipline where your intellect keeps your mind in the present action without allowing it to slip into the past worries or future anxieties. So it's a game between intellect and mind. Now all of us have these equipments, body, mind, intellect. Now just because we have this equipment doesn't mean our intellect is stronger than the mind. Usually mind is stronger than the intellect. So the natural tendency of the mind is what? Is to go into the past and future. In fact, it's called as Asthira and Chanchala. It is never steady. It keeps moving from one place to another, or within place, it will be fidgetive. So, that is the mind. It's the nature of the mind. And the nature of the mind is to be extroverted. Get attached to what you have and crave for what you do not have. This is the nature of the mind. It will crave for what you do not have. Get attached to what you have. Slip into the past worries. Be anxious about the future. And then look for only instant pleasures. So you need to therefore strengthen the intellect. When you strengthen the intellect, then the intellect will be able to control the mind from slipping into the past or future. And then keep it in the present and not allow it to just run after that which gives pleasure instantly. Whereas with strong intellect, your mind will be educated to say that, listen, this is probably giving you instant pleasure, but this is not good for you. There is something called a Shreya and there is something called a Preya. Shreya means what is good for you. Preya means what is pleasant for you. And this is what happens. This is how they are. All these things are passing, fleeting, etc. So by slowly educating and developing the intellect, you strengthen the intellect and you develop objectivity. The ability to stand apart and watch your own mind and take the right decisions and direct the mind accordingly. That intellect you develop, not just the intelligence. So that's what it is. Vedanta helps you to strengthen the intellect through the knowledge and hold your mind in the present without allowing it to slip into the past or future or crave for instant pleasures or get attached to what you have or crave for what you do not have. All this will not happen. There is nothing wrong in having a desire, but allowing them to become a condition or the craving has to be controlled. So therefore, you need to have a strong intellect. So he says, if you develop that strong intellect through Vedanta, then you will be able to concentrate. Otherwise, you cannot. For that, you need to understand about the world also. So when you understand about the world and you do this exercise of developing the intellect over a period of time, then you develop that objectivity or detachment and then you will be able to concentrate. So he says, with that concentration, you will be more efficient and productive in the field of your activity. So what is concentration? Concentration is a technique by which your intellect keeps your mind in the present action without allowing it to slip into the past or future. That is concentration. Now when we say it should not slip into the past or future, does it mean that to be successful, one should not learn from the past? Does it mean that when we say that you should not be anxious of the future, that we should not set the goal? The goal obviously belongs to the future. Should we not plan? Is that what Vedanta is saying? No. See, when you say planning for the future and learning from the past, it is an intellectual action. It is an intellect guided action. When my mind by itself goes to the past, it is due to the strength of the mind, weakness of the intellect. But when my intellect takes the mind to the past to learn something, right? Like for example, I'm communicating about a particular topic. So to communicate a particular topic, I may consciously tell my mind, go to the past experience, draw that example and give it to the class. Now, this is a conscious exercise. Your intellect allows the mind to go to the past in the present. It is happening in the present. So in the present, the intellect is allowing the mind to go to the past, draw the experience, talk about it, learn. That is learning. Similarly, planning. In the present, your intellect is allowing it to go to the future to plan, come back. It's a present action sanctioned by the buddhi. That is fine. In fact, that one should do. And one would be able to do only to the extent one's intellect is strong. And that is part of, you know, success. But what he is talking about is mind by itself goes to the past. Or mind by itself goes to the future. That, if you are not able to control, then you cannot concentrate. You will be constantly distracted. The person who is not able to concentrate, he will not be able to be successful. So that's why he says you need to strengthen the buddhi. So this exercise of studying, reflecting is not just to gather information. It is to strengthen the buddhi. The buddhi is strengthened to be able to guide the mind. That's all he says. So when you develop that concentration, it renders your mind objective. You then become more efficient and productive. See, only an objective person is able to be efficient. You see in the Mahabharata story, Arjuna was number one in the art of archery. And he had tremendous experience. He's won many battles before. He's got experience, he's got skill, everything by his side. But still, he got terribly attached and distracted. He was not objective. He became involved. As a result, he could not fight. He said, I can't fight. Gandivam samsrate hastat chaiva paridasyate. My skin is burning. I'm sweating. I'm having horripilations. His condition that he's talking about there is nothing but stress. So he says, I'm completely stressed. I cannot act. So in spite of his intelligence, skill, experience, he could not be efficient. He could not be productive there. Why? Because he did not have what is called as objectivity. Please remember this. An extremely important quality to be successful in life. To be able to stand apart and then deliver. To be able to be objective. Not get involved. Just be objective. So he says, that comes with intellectual strengthening, which allows you to concentrate. Arjuna was not able to concentrate. That's why he said, my head is spinning. Gandivam samsrate hasta. Vakchaiva paridakshyate. Means his, from his hand, with Gandiva, his bow is slipping. And then his head is spinning, his skin is burning. All that he's explaining. What is that? It means he's confused. He cannot concentrate. He doesn't know what is right, what is wrong. Because intellect is not strong. He's not able to be objective. On the battlefield, you cannot have Shatru Bhav or Mitru Bhav. You need to have Sakshi Bhav. You cannot become over involved, it's an enemy, and then get involved and then lose your objectivity. Nor can you get so close, Arya, there are friends there, there are relatives there. Then also you are gone. You need to have Sakshi Bhav. You got to deal with it objectively. However close Krishna and Arjuna could have been, they may be close friends, but on the battlefield they are not just close friends. Something more. That objectivity you need to have. If you do not have that objectivity, you cannot be successful in any field. And if you do not have that objectivity, you cannot concentrate. Because objectivity means you should have the ability to witness your own mind's demands, mind's passion, as it is demanding. One aspect of you should see, what to do, my mind is craving for this. Take care, better, better. You should be able to discuss with your mind. Like your children, you know. Sometimes they say, no, I want it now, I want it. But listen, you have to study now. No, no, I want it. How you want it? How will you deal with such situations when your children are behaving like that? All of you have grown-up children, I think, now. But I have to ask grandchildren. How will you deal with such a situation? What would be the technique when your children are adamant? I'm asking this question because the same way you need to deal with your mind. What is the technique? How did you bring up your kids? Anybody can answer.
Distracting the mind.
Distracting the mind. Okay.
We need to calm down the mind first.
How?
Yeah, that is the thing.
Who said distracting? It says iPhone. I don't know who it is. Who gave that answer?
I did, sir. Shobha.
Acha, okay. See, Sam, Dhan, Bed, Dhand. Right? So, when a child is adamant, and you know it is not good for the child, like child is saying, I have to have it now. But it's not good for the child. Straight away you cannot follow the method of punishment. You will go Sama, Dhan, Bed, Dhand. You know, Sama means discussion. Listen, last time only we got it. You have enough. We'll go back home, we'll look into it. There may be enough. If it's not there, we'll come and get it. You know, discussion. Then Dana. Are you just use what is there at home. Next time I'll give you two more. Bribing, you know. Dana. Then Beda. That is the distraction. Attracting to some other things. Distraction. And final is punishment. If you don't do it, you will not get this. So, the same way, objectively you are doing, na? Maybe your own child. But why are you doing that? Because you do not want, it's not that you do not want to give that to the child. After all, he or she is your child. But you know, it is not good for that child. Similarly, when the mind is not cooperating to concentrate, you need to be a little objective to be able to deal with the mind the same way. Discussion, samadhan, beda, dhand. When you do that, then you will be able to concentrate. Say, okay, today you concentrate, I'll give you something on Saturday. So, the way you deal with children, you've got to deal with your mind. And that you will be able to do only to the extent you are objective. Firstly, to be able to see that my mind is demanding this. But it's not good for me. So I should just pause. If the mind's unruliness is not so strong, just pausing itself, it will behave. If it's little strong, then it might need discussion, etc., etc. So that is what he means by objectivity. If you develop that, then you will be able to concentrate. Otherwise, not possible. So this is one aspect which is very important for success. Another very, very important aspect is consistency. Continue.
The next discipline is maintaining consistency of purpose, directing your actions towards a set goal. Your intellect chooses an ideal in life, a cause beyond your self-centered interest. Having fixed a goal, the intellect directs your actions towards it. Your actions then become consistent, which develops power, dynamism. This is clearly seen when water flows in one direction, develops power. Similarly, wind blowing in one direction has power. So has light focused at a point. Thus, through consistency, your actions are rendered more powerful, more successful.
See, what he is saying here is, in South India we have what is called as Rangoli. You know that column they call it in Tamil. When they draw that Rangoli, what do they do first? First they put the dots and then they connect the dots. You know, similarly in life, you need to have a goal. Now, the problem with us is we live and then baad mein dekh lenge goal ki laga le. Kya goal, kya baat kar rahe hain? Nobody knows what is a goal. What goal? So he says, if you want to succeed in life, you need to have a goal in life. And that Vedanta gives you. Because you ask questions. Hey, yaar, what is that I finally want? Kya se kya hai? Ultimately, what do I want? When I am running after money, what do I want? When I am running after name, what do I want? When I am running after health, what is exactly that I am looking for? When I am running after X, Y, Z, what am I actually looking for? Where is it? So once I become clear about it, then I fix that as my goal. And when I fix that as my goal, that is my reference point. We need to have a reference point now. And there is no reference point. The way you get up and say, kya kare ya? Okay, let me see if Shweta is free today. If Shweta is not free, let me call Mamta. Mamta is not free, Sandhya. I'll have to call, keep on calling on everybody's phone is engaged, then I don't know what to do. Then I get agitated. So, the point that he's trying to say is, I first need to fix a goal. And then all my actions should be channelized towards that goal. It's called consistency. So, now what is concentration? When your intellect keeps your mind in the present action, that is concentration. What is consistency? When your intellect keeps all your actions in the chosen direction, that is consistency. Now, what does it mean? It means, like for example, if you are a cricketer. Now, cricketer may be very consistent in training. Every day morning, 7 o'clock, he goes, trains, etc. But he may not be consistent with reference to his food habits. He may not be consistent with reference to his sleeping habits. No, what is my goal? For that goal, what time I should sleep? For that goal, what kind of food I should eat? For that goal, what kind of exercises I need to do? So, in other words, all your actions are channelized towards that one goal. That is called consistency. Even the house, supposing you have to decide upon where you need to keep your house. Just because I have some money and there is one big bungalow available 20 kilometers away, do I buy that? Or slightly smaller house I can afford in the city, but will enable me to do my work better. Which one should I go for? So consistency is determined by what? The goal. You have a goal and then all your actions are directed in line with that goal, towards that goal. Called consistency. That's why he gives an example of wind directed in one area or sunlight. When you focus it through a lens or a piece of paper, it burns the paper. So much of energy completely focused in one direction. So all your energy is material wealth. So all this material wealth I have, of course it's there for me to enjoy. But I need to understand how to enjoy it. What is happening today is, I'm enjoying, but I am going away from my goal. Actually, I don't have a goal. Even if I have a goal, I leave my consistency. Then I say, why am I not being successful? Because you are not using your assets to help you to be in that line. See, whatever assets I have, it is for me to use it in this particular field that I am giving myself into. So nothing wrong. You worked and you are having that asset. And for what you should have it. So that is called consistency. A lot of people, especially in spiritual field, there is so much confusion. They are, what is this? They call themselves spiritual, but they are having all expensive stuff. Now, for example, you know that my only job I am doing is conducting classes. So, and we do so many books, you know, Bhagavad Gita, Upanishads, and then Atma Bodha, Vajagovindam, etc., etc. So all these books, there are too many books, and there are reference books. Now if I come to different classes, morning I go to one place, another place I go in the evening, I have to carry all those books. Instead, if I have one, you know, technology has given gadgets now. In that gadget, I can give all the books. I can also send emails while I'm, you know, moving towards my class. So why not use it? What is the wealth for? Whatever wealth is coming to me is to put it for use in the very same field. So there is nothing wrong. But it should always be in line with that. That's all he's saying. Then there is direction set in life. When that is put, all your wealth, physical health, material wealth, mental wealth, intellectual wealth, everything you put in one direction. That is called consistency. That's what he says. Fix a goal. First, that is more important. Simply ask yourself, do I have a goal? I lived half of my life. At least now I should have a proper goal. What is my goal? Have I got that clarity? Then everything should be channelized according to that. Even a pen that I use should be helpful for me to achieve my goal. Just because it is something expensive and somebody has given it to me free, I don't have to keep it with me. Unnecessarily, I'll be holding so many things like that in my pocket and I will not be able to move. It may be very good, but what will I do with it? It is not helpful for my goal. I don't need it. That's called consistency. He says, therefore, when you are consistent, you will be powerful. It's very, very important discipline, consistency. Continue. Next one, third discipline is cooperation.
The third discipline is to recognize and maintain the spirit of cooperative endeavor. To achieve results in any field of activity, you will have to work with your colleagues as a team. You need to develop the support and cooperation of others related to your work. Work performed with such cooperation reaches heights of...
So now, how are you going to achieve that cooperation? Anybody? He has not mentioned that here. The third discipline is to recognize and maintain the spirit of cooperative endeavor. To achieve results in any field activity, you will have to work with your colleagues as a team. He is actually mentioning, but you need to draw it out. You need to develop the support and cooperation of others related to your work. Work performed with that cooperation reaches heights of achievement. So in this line, to achieve results in any field of activity, you will have to work with your colleagues as a team. So that is where he is giving the clue. So how do you develop that cooperation?
Dialogue.
Okay. Then
everyone's point of view.
Pardon?
Taking everyone's point of view.
Okay. Then?
Without doership, where you are working together for the common goal.
Absolutely. dealing with your ego first. See, the game of relationship, please understand, the game of life is about losing. It's not about winning. In the game of life, if you want to win, you've got to be a loser. Please write it down in your head. When you try to be a winner, you lose the game of life. When you are a loser, you will be a winner. This, if you understand, you can never fail in your relationship. In the sense, externally things can go bad because of so many other factors. But within you, the biggest problem is attachment, possessiveness, ego. You do not want to lose. That's why Swami Ramtita says the way to gain anything is to lose it. See, the first two, concentration and consistency, is about intellect controlling and directing the mind. This third, cooperation, is about intellect controlling and directing your ego. These are the two big rakshasas sitting within us. Kamsa and Chanura, destroying the beautiful city of Mathura. You know, our personality is the beautiful city of Mathura. And inside us, these two fellows are there. Kamsa and Chanura. And these two fellows will not allow you to be peaceful and experience that Mathura. Sweetness. So what will it? It will go on. Why only I should do? Why can't they do? Why am I, you know? Look at them. All the time, you know, the ego's talking like that. I. The moment you deal with your ego, you draw cooperation. You find this out. Swamiji gives very interesting examples. He says, because he travels a lot for his lectures, he's observed all this. So in this immigration counters, when you see, there's a huge big queue. Sometimes 4 or 5 flights have come at the same time from different places. And so there are 5 or 6 counters for all those people. Huge queues are there. Everybody is standing in the big queue. One fellow is completely drunk in the aircraft. He's sitting and only has been drinking. He is not able to stand and he's going on, hey, like that he's talking. And standing at the back, 2 fellows are holding him because he's not able to stand and he's going on blabbering. The immigration counter fellow is seeing all this. Hey, this fellow is a big nuisance. Hey, send that fellow here. So they bring him first. The fellow is drunk. They bring him first. He sees his passport, everything is fine. Puts the chapa and says, send this fellow first outside. Other fellows who are sober, they have to wait in the queue. Swamiji says, you also pretend that you have taken a little bit and like that, if you also talk, then maybe they will clear your immigration pass. Now, why he is saying that is, the fellow who has taken little alcohol, what has happened to him? Temporarily, what happens to him? Anybody? He loses his ego temporarily. Hey, he's forgotten who he is. He talks all kinds of nonsense. The moment he loses ego, he's taken care of. Similarly, a mad fellow is one who has lost his memory. Ego is nothing but the memories of the past. Pata hai main kon hu, mera paap kon hu, mera ye kon hu, mera wo kon hu, that is called ego, right? So, the moment the mad fellow has lost his ego, society pays and says, Bata, please, you know, put him in the home, cure this fellow. Taxpayers' money is taken care of. Another example is children, small children, babies. They don't expect anything from anybody. Everybody goes and wants to be around the child. Because the child is not having any ego, innocence only. So any number of examples you give and think, when you lose your ego, everybody comes to your help. The moment you assert your ego, I want it. You have to do this one. You have to do that. I did this to you. I. The moment you say I, gone. So that's what it is. This third discipline of cooperation is about dealing with your ego. The first two disciplines of concentration and consistency is about dealing with your mind. And mind and intellect are, sorry, mind and ego are the two rakshasas. Big problem. Conquering them is what we are talking about. This nobody teaches. All the other factors they teach. But how to concentrate, how to be consistent, how to draw that cooperation. How will you draw that cooperation? Not possible. You know? See, in 1998, I think there was a recession in India. And in one of the magazines, I think Outlook or India Today, I don't remember exactly. In one of the magazines, in the front cover, in the magazine they had interviewed Srinivasan from Sundaram Group. You know, they had done very well during recession also. So they had interviewed their MD, Srinivasan. And in the front cover, the entire TVS group employees, including the laborers, everybody, and Mr. Srinivasan are sitting, and the group photo was put in the cover page. And when you read, I read that article. He says, this is not possible without everybody's contribution. And during recession, firstly, you will reduce perks and everything for your employees. He said, before I did for my employees, I did it for myself first. Because I am also an employee. So first, I reduce my perks. Then my next level team. Then finally, the laborers. And then, you know, he said when the interviewer wanted a picture of his, he said, listen, we achieved this because of everybody. So put everybody's photo, including mine. But everybody should be there. Even my laborers should be there. The labor team, which is there working in the machine shop, they should be there. Everybody should be there. So, that is the leader, you know, who is able to dissolve the ego. And that's the person who can draw the cooperation. They will say, yeah, we will work. Now, if you will go on and assert your ego, slowly, slowly the cooperation will go. It will work for a while till they have certain conditions. It won't work for long. If you want cooperation, you should handle your ego. That is a technique. You need to know how to handle your ego. And you can pretend. It has to be genuine. You're pretending they'll come to know. You can't fool them for long. But that's what he says. To achieve results in any field of activity, you'll have to work with the colleagues as a team. See, there is a difference between team and crowd. What is the difference? What is the difference between team and crowd?
Team is maybe working for a common goal.
Hmm.
And the crowd is just generally there to create a bit of chaos. I mean, there's no oneness in them.
Exactly. So what makes it a team is the goal. What makes it a team is the mission. What makes it a team is the vision. Isn't it? Now generally, in most of the organizations, they'll have a mission statement, vision statement, because you need ISO, this certificate, that. You'll have all the statements. But when you, as a leader, can inspire your team and all of you can have that one vision, then you become a team. Otherwise, you are just a crowd there. And one wants to go this side, the other wants to go the other side. Each one wants to assert their ego, then there won't be cooperation. So therefore he says, you've got to first become a team. Team means you've got to reduce, dissolve your ego. And only you are a team. Otherwise, in fact, you can clearly see this, you know, those days, after the World Cup, no World Cup is going on, Cricket World Cup. Whoever wins the World Cup, those days what they used to do is, winner of the World Cup, usually it used to be West Indies or Australia those days. And then all the other teams, they will put together, they will have a world team, World 11. Some of the best players of West Indies, India, Pakistan, all other teams put together, they'll make one team, world team. And Australia, who's the world champion, they'll play one match. World champion Australians and rest of the world. And in the rest of the world, best bowlers, best batsmen from different teams, but still Australia will win. These fellows, they have just put together, they're crowd. Each one is great. They've not come together. They've been put together. Putting together is different. Coming together is different. Team is coming together. It is coming from within. Whereas crowd is put together. So that's why, in spite of great players from different teams coming together, most of the time only the World Cup winners win the match. Rest of the world doesn't win. Why is this? They don't gel as a team. Nowadays they have all these kind of activities, no, for them to gel as a team. Now in IPL and all that, you see some Australians are there, some West Indies fellows are there, some Indians are there. So what do? 2 months before itself they come, they get together, they bring the family, they do all kinds of things. Other outside cricket also. So that you become one family. You lose the ego. And then that spirit comes on the ground. Then they are different players. Otherwise, each one is individually capable. But collectively they fail. Because they have not lost their ego. That's the point he's trying to say here. You can only draw the cooperation to the extent you have lost your ego. The way to gain anything is to lose it. In relationship, remember this. Any relationship, whether it is in the work field or in family or anywhere, losing. See, that is love. When you love your grandchild so much and you're playing chess with an 8-year-old, that's for fun. You may just try to cheat here and there, just, hey, you're cheating, all that is fine. But otherwise, you want to lose and the grandchild who is only 8-year-old wins and then say, hey, I won the match. Seeing that, you become happy. Isn't it? You lose and you see your grandchild winning and you become happy. So there is, in love, you are ready to lose. In lust, you want to conquer. You want to dominate. You want to control. It's controlling. All that is because of your lust. It's not coming from love. So if you really want to be successful, there has to be genuine love, genuine identification. That has to be there. See, in the movie Titanic, the beginning is very egoistic. He says, this ship will never sink. And the very first voyage it sinks. The captain. In the end, when you see when the ship is sinking, he tries and helps everybody to escape, as many people as he can help. And then in the end, he also drowns. A leader is one in these kind of situations. He's not the one who runs away first. He says, listen, if the ship is sinking, I'll be the last one to get out of the ship. I'll make sure everybody escapes, then only I'll try to escape. Otherwise I'll sink, that's fine. I'm ready to die. Then you're a leader. If you're not ready to die in everything, everywhere your face should come, everywhere you should be the one, then what kind of cooperation will you get from everybody else? You get nothing. That's why This is another very important factor. The first two talks about the Rakshas called the mind. This talks about the Rakshas called ego. When these two are conquered, we'll experience a beautiful city within called Mathura. So therefore he says, work performed with such cooperation reaches heights of achievement. Where there is no assertion of ego, there is normalcy. And any part of your body is making its presence known, that means there is something wrong there. And you don't make your presence known, you just normally function. Then that means the business, the organization is hale and healthy. And therefore there will be more success. It's no problem. You know. So, work performed with cooperation, which means dissolving the ego through higher knowledge, through higher exposure. When you have directed your intellect towards the higher, you understand the stupidity and insignificance of the ego. And you do not want to assert it. Ready to dissolve it. And the more you dissolve, the more you get it. Because the more you dissolve the ego, then you will see Bhagavan present in it. It will be an action that will be executed by the Bhagavan. When the more I assert my ego, I am not giving space for Bhagavan to do anything. Obviously, it will be done by me. Then obviously, the productivity will not be there. That's why you just step aside. Bhagwan to do it through you. Vedanta helps you to step aside. Vedanta gives you that knowledge to step aside. And you easily perform with no stress. I have to do. Nothing like that. Just relax. And dynamic action is going on, but you are cool like a cucumber. Because your ego is perfectly under the control of your buddhi. Continue, please.
Vedanta therefore presents you the knowledge for your spiritual evolution as well as your material well-being. With this knowledge, you will command peace and comfort in your life. People are ignorant of the worth of this knowledge. They dub Vedanta as a religion of resignation and retirement. Thus denying themselves this precious knowledge, they are lost in the world and suffer from worry and anxiety, stress and strain. Vedanta cries out to one and all, you are making a veritable hell of the world. Acquire this chaste knowledge. You will then turn the world into a heaven and fulfill your mission in life.
So all he's saying is there is a big misunderstanding in people's mind that Vedanta is religion of resignation and retirement. It is not a religion of success, prosperity and peace. That's why nobody wants to get to that. After 16 years, so he says, if you have this knowledge, then you will be able to deal with your mind and ego. See, it is not saying that you do not go to school or college. It is not saying that you should not use your past wealth that has been passed over to you from your parents or ancestors. Use all that. But for you to use all that, you need to have the ability to control your mind and ego. You could have gone to the best of school and got the fantastic intelligence. But if you do not know how to control your mind and ego, with that intelligence you will destroy yourself. If you inherited so much wealth from your ancestors, but you do not know how to control your mind and ego, you will destroy yourself with that wealth. That's why Adi Shankara says, wealth is calamitous. Artham anartham is this. Wealth becomes calamitous if you do not have this knowledge. If you have this knowledge and harness your mind and ego, then that wealth, even if it is 5 rupees or 5,000 crores, 10,000 crores, it will be an asset for you. Otherwise, it will be detrimental to you. That's all he's saying. People are ignorant of the worth of this knowledge. This knowledge makes anything valuable. Without this knowledge, everything becomes a detrimental factor in your life. Pali is saying, you suffer from anxiety, worry and all that without this knowledge. You have made a hell out of this world. But if you have this knowledge, then you will be able to make it a heaven. So Vedanta doesn't do anything. It just helps you to deal with your mind and ego. It is a bigger lesson. When we learn that, then we can enjoy, we fulfill the mission in life, which is finding the happiness within. And that's the next topic, eternal bliss within. We'll do it next week. Let's conclude now. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vishishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Kayena Vacha Manasendriyaiva Buddhyatmanava Prakate Swabhavat Karomi Adhya Sakalam Parasmai Narayana Yeti Samarpayami. Hari Om.